If you love the History Extra podcast, make sure you follow us to keep up to date and get all the latest episodes. Thanks for your support, and I do hope you enjoy this episode.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the History Extra podcast from BBC History Magazine, Britain's best-selling history magazine. I'm Ellie Cawthorne. You're listening to a special bonus episode featuring the former Prime Minister, Gordon Brown. Tomorrow, the 11th of August, he'll be presenting a BBC Radio 4 documentary about the 19th century American philanthropist, Andrew Carnegie. And that was the subject of our interview with him. The questions were initially put to him by the BBC producer, Liza Gregg, but I've re-recorded them to improve their audio quality. We began by asking Gordon to explain his personal connection to Andrew Carnegie.
My father had a Carnegie scholarship, and that allowed him to go to university in the 1930s. And I was brought up in the town next to Carnegie's town of Dunfermline and found out at first hand how Carnegie had provided the library, the college, the swimming baths, the physical education centre, the college, and even bought the park that surrounded Dunfermline and given it to the local citizens. And so I was aware of this huge amount of philanthropy that he'd done at the turn of the century, and was also aware that some towns had done better than others as a result of what he'd done. And so it was worth investigating, why did Carnegie do what he did, and what does it mean for today?
How important a historical figure is he, do you think?
Carnegie is the biggest and greatest philanthropist the world has ever seen. The scale of his philanthropy is far greater than that of, for example, Bill Gates and Melinda Gates, who've done a huge amount. But equally, at the same time, he made a commitment that he would give all his money away. So to die rich, he said, was to die disgraced. And so during the course of his life, he made it his business to give all his money away by giving it mainly to education. He did a great deal for peace. He did a great deal for music. He did a great deal for other causes that he thought were important at any particular time. But his main passion was education, because he believed that if he could support the education of young people in particular, the education of anybody who couldn't afford to go to university or get a college degree, and support the libraries that would teach them, then he would help people improve themselves. It was a gospel that was quite authoritarian. He knew best. But at the same time, he chose a cause where to release people's potential was going to be the best chance that they had to make the best of their lives.
And he put conditions on that giving, didn't he?
Carnegie believed that if he gave, but those people who received did nothing, then that would be a transaction that wouldn't work. And so he insisted that if he gave money, something was done in return. So, for example, when he gave the libraries, and he gave 3,000 libraries around the world, he insisted that those people who had the libraries given by him provided the books themselves. And that usually caused quite a lot of controversy, because money had to be raised locally to back up the endowment of the library by Carnegie. And in some cases, they had to have local referenda to decide, as in Burnt Island, the next door town to Dunfermline, to decide to have the library. And it was conditional in another sense, that he expected the recipient to do something in quite a big way. I remember when he was asked by New York Philharmonic Orchestra to give a sum of money to save the orchestra from going out of business. And Carnegie that morning was prepared to give them money, but only half of it, and told them to go away and find another donor, and then he would pay up. Later in the day, the Philharmonic people came back and said, look, we've found the money. And Carnegie started to write the check to back up the other donor. When he asked casually who the other donor was, it was your wife, he was told. And Carnegie, of course, had been outmaneuvered by his wife because the Carnegie family were paying for the whole of the orchestra. Carnegie's gospel of wealth was that he should give it all away. So to die rich was to die disgraced. And so he set out in a very planned way to give away his money. Now, the first 60 years of his life, he had made money. The next 20, he was giving it away. Some people say that he could not undo the damage he'd done in the first 60 years by whatever he did in the next 20, because he was a ruthless employer. He was authoritarian. He was quite egotistical. And even when he was giving away money, he was insisting that conditions be met that were quite onerous sometimes for the recipient, that they had to raise money themselves or they had to do something in return. But it was part of his gospel of wealth that self-improvement would only happen if the recipient was prepared to take action themselves to back up what the donor did. And so if he gave the library, he wanted the recipients to provide the books. If he gave money to an orchestra, as he did on one occasion, he insisted that someone else give the other half. He would only give half the money that they needed. And he was quite authoritarian too. He didn't like religion in any real sense, and he wasn't prepared to support churches, but he would support music in churches because he thought the one thing he could do was make churches more interesting, more exciting. So he gave away lots of organs as donations to churches to encourage music in churches that previously had either shunned music or just didn't have the money to have decent music. And that was his way of interpreting what he should do to help the religious organizations of the countries.
What do you think of Carnegie as a person? Is there anything you like or admire about him?
I like the idea that he focused on education and on the potential of people. And while you could say he was authoritarian in demanding that people give something in return, I think it was his sense that people, if they were going to develop their potential to the full, had to make the effort themselves. And so it was a self-improvement ideology. God helps those who help themselves is a sort of Samuel Smiles of the 19th century view that Carnegie seemed to adopt. But of course, he was right about education, that there was no point in him giving money unless the people who were being educated would make the effort to make the most of their talents. And that's what he insisted on doing. When he gave money to the Scottish universities, he did something very radical. He offered to provide free tuition for thousands of students. Indeed, by 1910, half the students of Edinburgh University and the other Scottish universities were receiving tuition help, free tuition, as a result of Carnegie's donation. But when he started out with this proposal to give money for free tuition fees, the university authorities, traditional as they were, who had actually very little money from benefactions at all, were not prepared to accept the money for tuition fees. They wanted it for buildings. They wanted it for the research of the universities. They didn't want to encourage free tuition because they thought they would have a horde of students that were perhaps not as well qualified as they should be getting free tuition. So Carnegie had to drive a very hard bargain, and I do admire him for this. He would always drive a hard bargain, and the hard bargain was, in the end, that if they provided free tuition, at his expense, of course, he would give the universities money for the buildings. And it was a deal that was done to make sure that half the students of Scotland had free tuition. So it was a deal that made it possible for thousands and thousands, including my own father, to be able to go to university on a Carnegie scholarship and to do what they would otherwise probably never have been able to do as the first in their family to enjoy higher education, be able to afford to do so.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
How relevant is he today, do you think?
Carnegie makes us think about what the purpose of philanthropy actually is. I think he makes us think about it in two ways. One is we've got to look at the impact. And so we now have tools for measuring the impact of giving and of donations and of where it's directed. And so it makes us think of getting the best use out of philanthropic money. It's not just an add-on that you don't really take into account because it is just money handed out. You've really got to be as scientific and rational. As Bill Gates, for example, has insisted on, rightly so, in measuring the impact so that you get as good a return as possible for the philanthropy you do. But I think the second thing he does is makes us think about the purpose of philanthropy and whether philanthropy is really a small number of rich people doing as they like and just sponsoring the causes that they find attractive and perhaps even changing from one moment to the next in a very discretionary way, because charity is given can be as equally taken away, or whether people should, as Carnegie did, think very carefully about the purpose. So Carnegie insisted on education because it was the route to other goals as well, like good health, like a good environment, like good employment. Education, he thought, unlocked all the other goods that we wanted to create, and I mean good health and good environment and so on. So Carnegie was very, very conscientious about what he was giving money to, and he wouldn't just give money as an add-on, and he wouldn't just give it at the margin. It was right at the center of the last 20 years of his life, thinking about how he could make the world a better place through his philanthropy. And so as a result of Carnegie, philanthropy moved from being a sort of marginal activity where a few rich people gave money away at the end of their lives to being absolutely central to the way our societies are developed. And people came to rely on this kind of charitable works that Carnegie did. And I think we've got to think carefully in this generation about philanthropists, asking them to coordinate their work. We are in an incredibly unequal world where a small number of people have huge amounts of money, which give them enormous amount of power. But they must also think carefully about whether the causes that they're supporting are both achieving the results that they would like to see, and whether these are indeed the best causes if we're going to change society for the better.
Tell us about your program for Radio 4.
I think it's important 100 years after Carnegie's death to evaluate what difference he made, but what lessons he has for today's world. And what I mean by that is that his philanthropy was groundbreaking. He moved philanthropy from being a marginal activity, a sideshow for people who'd made a lot of money to do something later in their life, to being absolutely central to both what he did and to what lots of people have been encouraged to do as a result of his inspiration and his example. And philanthropy changed from being something that was really not seen as important at all to being something that is potentially one of the great change makers in our world. But Carnegie was so determined that he thought about the purpose of his philanthropy and the results of it that he took a very scientific approach to it. And it's whether we have learned all these lessons in the last 100 years that I think is worth investigating. And in particularly when you look at the area that Carnegie focused on most, education, thousands of libraries, free tuition for students, helping black students, helping for the first time women to be medical students, all the innovations he made, we've got to ask ourselves why it is that there are 800 million children leaving school without qualifications and we've done so little about it. We help locally and we help nationally in education projects like financing our own universities and our own colleges and schools, but we do so little in global education. Now, Carnegie would have been shocked, astounded, amazed, and he would have demanded that we change our ways.
That was Gordon Brown. His documentary, Gordon Brown on the Gospel of Wealth, airs Sunday the 11th of August at 1:30 p.m. on BBC Radio 4. That's all for this special episode of the podcast, which was produced by Ben Hewitt and Jack Bateman. We'll be back as usual on Monday, when we'll be discussing some archaeological secrets with Mike Pitts.